When you're an MC, you write and you spit lyrics for other MCs, you know, so they'll listen and be like, yo, this guy's dope, man. You know, you get those props from other hip hop people. But then along the way, when you're writing, you find out like, yo, this is like therapy, you know, for me, man, to express myself. And if, you know, I'm going to get vulnerable, you know, on some of these songs, you know, and write about my life, and I'm going to share myself with the listener. And I found out along the way, when you do that, when you're vulnerable and you share your story with the people, there's somebody out there who receives it, you know, and they're inspired.
This is the Beware How Show. Mystic philosophy made practical. There are many paths up the mountain, and we're just pointing at a few of them. I'm Bob Peck, speaking with Scott Stanley, Ryan Padgett, and Melina Kiriaki. We are conscious creatives and formerly closeted mystics trying to unpack the inaccessible. According to the mystics, the truth cannot be spoken, but we'll try to talk about it anyway. Hello, this is Wednesday, November 4th. And this is the Beware How Show. Today we are speaking with Superman, aka Christian Parrish Takes the Gun. Thanks so much for joining us.
I bet. It's an honor, privilege to be here.
Oh man, we are delighted to talk to you and learn more about your work. I'm going to read your bio and we'll jump right in.
Sweet.
As a member of the Absaluka Nation, Superman makes his home in Montana. Superman is Christian Parrish Takes the Gun, a Native American dancer and innovative hip-hop artist who has dedicated his life to empowering and spreading a message of hope and faith through a unique fusion of traditional and modern culture. He's the recipient of the 2017 MTV VMA Award for the Best Fight Against the System. He is also a NAMI Native American Music Award winner, North American Indigenous Image Award, and 7 Tunny Awards. He recently was awarded the Aboriginal People's Choice Music Award in Canada for Best Video and was voted MTV's New Artist of the Week. His latest videos titled Prayer Loop Song and Why both have gone viral. They've received over 3 million. I think it's up to 4 or 5 by now, maybe north of that, million views on YouTube and Facebook, putting him in high demand, touring extensively throughout the U.S. and internationally. Super cool. Thanks so much for joining us, Superman.
Thank you.
Mentioned this beforehand, but just to flavor the conversation, I have really enjoyed learning about Native American culture, history, and Native spirituality. It's terrible what the early Americans, colonialists, did to the Native population, and I really hope that the current generation and future generations can work towards repairing those past harms and creating a future where all people, all cultures are honored and can live in a more harmonious world.
Definitely. Great way to, you put it just great right there at the end.
What's that, Bob?
Living together, thanks, coming,
man,
together.
You know? Thanks, man. Forward. Thank you. And I've been listening to your music. So part of that is because I've been persuaded by you and informed awesome. By your rhetoric. Tell us about your background. You know, I know that you went from kind of more traditional, you know, kind of African-American rap and hip hop, and then transition to more Native focus over time. Sure, there's a interesting story there. We were introduced to you through another documentary filmmaker who made a short film about you. And just tell us about kind of that process, about you getting into music and how you wound up where you are.
For sure. First of all, I'd just like to introduce myself in the Absaluka language, which is probably, you know, thousands of years old. You know, I always kind of tell people, hey, if I had a coin here and I said, this coin's 1,000 years old. You know, some of us would be like, that's amazing. You know, that's worth something. But sometimes we don't look at our own indigenous, you know, cultures and languages and kind of like hold it in that value, you know, of being amazing, you know, that we have it still. And so I said, hey, Balaja, we are Gimar Chalahuk. I'd say, my name is Christian Parrish, takes the gun, aka Superman. My Absalagan name is Aweagemachla, which means good fortune on Mother Earth. My clan is the Yashichita, which is the Big Lodge clan. So that is the language, the introduction they say there. Yeah. And I'm a hip hop artist, I'm a flute player. I'm a father, I'm a husband, a DJ, you know, I got three
playing many roles
and two ugly ones. So did you practicing comedian as well? Yeah. So I got into music, you know, for the love of hip hop, you know, like when somebody says, what are you, you know, are you, what kind of artist or genre, you know, I would just say, you know, I'm a hip hop artist, because that is what I started as. But it can go, you know, in many different directions. Mm-hmm. And I try to use different styles and, you know, experiment a lot, you know, so you could say experimental as well, or native, you know, indigenous, something like that. But I got into hip hop early on. Also, when I say native, I'm learning that is such a generalization, you know. I mean, there's memes and saying and, you know, things like that that says natives be like this, you know, and we generalize the whole,
right.
Like it could be anybody,
you hundreds
know,
of
to like, you know, just like that. But when us, like from here in Montana, when we say native, we mean the tribes here, you know, the mm-hmm. tribes in Montana. And so I can't even speak for another tribe. You know, I can't say, well, us natives here in Montana, you know, that's really generalizing. So when I say that, I'm really saying what I know of my own tribe, you know, the Absalaga. So I just want to let people know that it's like when we say native, there's over 600 different tribes in the U.S. alone, you know, and each one is different language, customs, everything, you know. And so just to say, well, us natives are this way is not correct. So I'm correcting myself.
Useful, you know? Disclaimer. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm still learning as well. So anyway, my journey with hip hop, you know, I was growing up, I was born in Seattle, grew up in Crow Agency, Montana, reservation life. And the hip hop part kind of came later on, you know, but early on in my story, was kind of, you know, we have this colonization, you know, we have colonization happens to Native people, and we see these different statistics, a lot of negative stuff. So going through that, fast forwarding from that to where I first heard hip hop, you know, I was like, yo, this is Rapper's Delight, you know, Sugar Hill Gang, you know, yo, what is this, you know? It's like, this is amazing. I like this, you know, this rapping, you know, this, the rhyming and the rhythm and everything was totally different. And so we were just like, man, this is cool. This is something cool. So anytime we heard hip hop or somebody rapping, we're like, yo, what is that? What is that? And then my cousins would go back to Seattle. They lived there. And then they would come back with tapes, mixtapes, you know, that they recorded on the radio, man. I think at the time the hip hop station was called K-Fox. There's a DJ named Nasty Ness, you know, he was on there. And it was awesome. He was always playing, you know, the newest jams. And we play it in Crow Agency, a town of 2000, you know. And we just jam out to all these new hip hop songs. And people were like, yo, what is that? You know, and we're kind of like, we were cool because we had the new stuff.
Love it.
So we started breakdancing, you know, we were B-boys. That was probably the first part of my participation.
What decade is this? What, like, what were some of those
back in the 1900s?
yeah, for sure.
1900s. That's like, yo, that's 80s, man. That's 80s.
The 80s, yeah.
80s right there. So we were.
Because it was started off kind of more funky, more soul, and then got 90s kind of gangster rap, and then 2000s kind of club rap. It's evolved, yep. And you know, changed over the years too. Yeah, just curious for
Exactly.
Context,
yeah.
Hip hop history.
It's still evolving, you know. It's like That's what I love about it too, is like you can make that your own. Like people around the world have made hip hop their own, you know, their own culture. And so it's like a universal language, which is great. Yeah. So that's kind of like my introduction to hip hop, you know, and we really enjoyed the culture of it, you know, not just the sound, but the culture of hip hop, because it comes, you know, people say it's a black culture, you know, people say that. But if you know the true roots of hip hop, it's not really a black culture, you know, it's like a culture of the oppressed. And there were many different races, you know,
exactly.
New York City, you know, the Puerto Rican, you know, just all kinds of people that were participating in this culture of hip hop. And so I always share that, you know, I always share that, because somebody would say, oh, you're appropriating black culture. And I was like, no, it's, you know, I don't believe it's black culture. It is a big part, but when hip hop started, the culture of it was for the,
it's socially critical of the haves and the have nots and the kind of disparity within society that you guys can relate to from the Native American perspective.
Yeah, exactly. It was economic, you know, it was like an economic type of culture, you know, a voice of the oppressed. So when we heard the MCs rapping, you know, they were like talking about oppression, you know, and that's what natives could relate to them. We're like, yo, that's us, man. They're talking about us too, man. That's straight up, man. They're kind of like voicing, you know, our struggle as well. So a lot of natives were really drawn to hip hop because of that as well.
Love it. Yeah, there's even musically, there's like a percussive quality. I mean, that definitely comes out in your work.
To the man who stole my antidepressants, I hope you're happy. So come and get your love like Redbone. I'm lit when I spit, you better smudge your headphones. They wantin' my balls like when they stuck in the dead zone. But this ain't death, I'm reppin' it nice. Call me the judge, cause you get sentenced to life. Pro agency, you messin' with a res fed. Like the game of bowling, cause we knockin' down rednecks. Nah, I'm making fun, maybe them racist ones. Come on, put away them guns and stop the hatin', son. I ain't trying to be that hostile who shot ya. I got no beef.
You're integrating beats from native, traditional native sounds. That is very interesting and unique to your work, and I think native hip hop in general, and like that percussive quality of certain beats per minute and so on is like, it's a really interesting merging of the two kind of music genres. Yeah, yeah.
Drums, you know, you think about that, the roots of the different rhythms, you know, things like that. Yeah, you just kind of like even with our music, you know, like native music, it's the way we sing, you know, is not on beat, you know. It's not like this. You know, it's not like that. I mean, the West Coast, it is. It's like that. They sing that way. Their traditional songs are like that. But over here, like Absaluga, we're off the beat. You know, you know, it's the singing is off the beat.
Yeah,
so that in itself, when you have hip hop culture, you know, and bringing those two together, that's a task right there too. You know,
yeah,
like those beats and having bars. You know, having counts of four. and making native music counts of four. You know, you almost have to be a DJ, man, to do that. You know,
yeah.
Like, the
yeah.
people that I know who really pull it off really good are DJs, man. Like they, and powwow people. They're powwow people and they're DJs. So they know the rhythms of the culture and they know hip hop culture and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, DJs can chop up a rhythm really well. So I could see them being really good at it. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's been infiltrating my brain and like my like subconscious for the last few weeks. So I I'm hooked.
Good deal. Mission accomplished.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, no kidding. I'm hypnotized. Tell me about the, thanks for sharing that. I think it's so like, that's a great way to explain away like cultural appropriation for native hip hopers because there's just so many connections. I know, and Dylan, who is our producer friend who filmed that, short of you under the big sky for one of the Montana productions. I know there's a lot of like, it sounds like there's a lot of different shows and content you're working on, which is so cool. But, he gave us some background and he shared, about your kind of initial fame that went from kind of, that wasn't as unique to you is what, I mean, don't let me tell your story for you, but you pivoted or you, evolved as a musician to incorporate what sounded like more of your spiritual and more of your own native voice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about that.
You mean like the culture integration, the fusion, how that came about?
I think it's what it sounded like was you kind of started, Melina's, I think maybe you can explain it better than I can.
No, I'm sorry. I'm like over here like about to step in. No, I just,
no, go for it.
My question is very much really, it might actually be very much what you're referring to, Bob, but more so where the regalia piece and the dancing came in, was that, that's not how you started, correct? Or did you start with just the rapping? So to Bob's point, hearing a little bit more of the journey of, you know, I think it was a part in your interview where you're like, I don't want to be that guy. Once you first started. And so I have the same exact question, like how was that experience for you when you first started receiving all of this fame and then understanding, okay, which direction do I want to go here? What guy do I want to be? What story, people are listening to me. What story do I want to tell? I've just found it so inspiring. So that's my question too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So there's kind of like almost like two transitions, you know, like there's just some chapters. There's always new chapters. And so like the first chapter of when I started doing hip hop was we started rapping, you know, and we were doing some crazy stuff. You know, we were doing some, you know, like you said, 90s, you know, we had the gangster phase, you know, and so Boys in the Hood came out. Menace to Society was out there. Everybody was fighting, you know, trying to claim, you know, gangs and things like that. And so you had to be tough, you know, you had to be hard. And if you're going to rap, you had to be living these things that you were rapping about, you know. You couldn't be fake at all, you know. You had to be living these things. And so we took it upon ourselves to say, yo, if we're going to rap about crazy stuff, we're going to live this crazy stuff, you know. It was actually backwards, you know. We were like backwards instead of just, you know, we were trying to rap and then we were like, oh, let's, if we're going to rap about this, you know, we start rapping, we're going to live this life. So we started doing stupid stuff, you know, crazy stuff. So we would be real, you know, which is totally stupid, man. It's like, I feel embarrassed.
Yeah, you saw through that pretty quickly. Yeah.
So that was like the first chapter. And along that way, when I started to work with other, or it was starting to take a step where like, yo, I'm having opportunities to perform, you know, and to share my music. And so along that way, I got to, you know, on the road, I started, you know, my mind wasn't in a positive place, you know, wasn't in a good place. And so I started doing other things and I was like, this is not going where I really wanted to go. You know, my heart is not really, I'm just going along with whatever rappers say and do, you know, it's just like cliche, you know, just cliche stuff. And so along that road, I just made it up in my mind. I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm not going to live like that, man. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to go this way. I'm going to do something positive, man. I was raised in church, you know, in Christianity, Western church culture. And so I was really had my faith, you know, had my faith seeds, you know, cultivating inside. And so as I got older, when I was doing music, I said, you know what, I'm gonna use my music to express my faith. And so that's when I started becoming a Christian rapper, basically. You know, I started rapping about the Lord, you know, and going to church and, you know, the Bible, you know, things like that. And so that started going up to my journey to my other transition of the culture. So Christianity on our reservation, we're very churched people, you know, like Crows, like Absalaga, really very church, a lot of churches. There's a believer, you know, in Christianity in every family. I would say that was safe to say. And so, but there's a, you know, there's the culture, there's traditions, there's the spirituality, and then there's Western church culture, Christianity, colonization, you know. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Totally. Yep. Together, very aggressive.
Yeah,
it's evangelical.
It doesn't go like this, and hey, you know, let's come together. It stops. Right. You're wrong. I'm right. That's, you know, that's evil. We're not evil. You know, it's a line in the sand. You know, it's basically a line in the sand. Mm-hmm. And so, me being a dancer, I've always danced since I was a fourth grader, and so participating in church, I had to listen to pastors say, that's evil, you know, like, don't do that. You know, the drum has a spirit, has a demonic spirit, you know, things like that.
Heretical, and, you know,
we hear these
accusations of.
For sure. And so, you know, human beings, we're so easily influenced. We just go along, you know, with leaders and stuff like that, you know, the way we are. And that's how it, you know, it was. But in your mind, you're still questioning, you know, you still have questions, because in your heart, when you go out there and dance, you feel connected, you know, to God, to the creator, you know, like when I hear that drum, you know, and they're singing and my feet hit the grass, you know, in my moccasins and I'm dancing, I feel like, yo, this is me. I belong here. You know, like it's a spiritual experience.
Yeah, beautiful.
And so for somebody to say that's demonic or evil, I, you know, I'm like, no, it ain't, you know, it's not, you know, but I'm still trying to participate. And so anyways, there's all of this, you know, in my journey going on.
I want you to definitely, you know, if feel free to stay in that space. I didn't really preface the show that well, I don't think, in that we want to hear about your music, but this show is focused on spirituality. It is focused on kind of untangling institutional religion and really inclusivity, I think, is a key theme we talk a lot about too on the show, about how there's really many paths. There's one summit at the top of the mountain, but there's a lot of ways to get there. You know, and particularly we were all raised Christian. We're not regular churchgoers now, but you know, to your point, there's a real beauty in those teachings of Jesus that are impactful and you know, really have stayed with me certainly over the years. And it's just really interesting to hear you talk about that juxtaposition on the reservation, and that, you know, you're having like positive experiences with both, but you know, perhaps the leaders of those spiritual systems, the leaders are at odds, you know, the ego, the face of the ego and the man, you know, in power or whatever is the one telling people what to do, and that there's differences, but you're feeling a lot of value and spiritual kind of connectivity.
Yeah, for sure.
That's beautiful.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. I never like bash Christianity or you say, yo, that's fake. Throw it out the window, man. It's like this, you know, I never do that because of my experience, you know. Like when I go to the altar and whatever the preacher, he just moved in that moment of bringing that goodness, you know, the Jesus's word or whatever, you know, and the spirit is there, the vibe. Just like when I'm dancing, I feel you know, that power and that presence is there as well. Mm-hmm. And like I've seen, you know, amazing things. I mean, experienced amazing supernatural things, you know, in those realms of Christianity, you know, Jesus and stuff like that. So I could never just say it it's not real, or it's not, you know, I think it's all connected, you know, if it's all connected together and all has its place mm-hmm. and purpose. Mm-hmm. So I'm thankful. I'm actually so thankful it's raised, you know, with those values and wanting to do good, you know, for the creator, for God, you know, and not sin, you know, and stuff like that. And it helped me. It kind of molded me to who I am now. But along that way, there's the part of I'm native, you know, there's I'm native. Look at what they did. Look at what they did in the name of right. Christ, you know, to our yeah. people and all the priests, the boarding schools, what they did, you know, to our people is so horrible. You know, there's just so many stories, you know, that come along with that. And that's why Native people are like, yo, man, I don't want any part of that. You know, how mm-hmm. could I? How could I want to be a part of something like that that yeah. doesn't want me to be who God created me to be? You know, doesn't want mm-hmm. me to speak a language that, you know, that I come from mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Is mm-hmm. so there's that, as I said, you know, the
yeah, absolutely, you know, all legitimate.
So valid.
I mean, that's yeah. Collective trauma. You know, yeah, absolutely,
for sure. And so like. Natives are in a, well, we as Apsaluga are in a state of emergency of preserving our culture, you know, our languages, our song, everything's in a state of emergency since day one of the, you know, invasion, you know, of, mm-hmm. of the lands. We've been in a state of emergency of preserving just who we are and our identity. And so all the policies, you know, that are put in place against Native people that aren't even being taught, you know, in the schools. People don't even know about these things, you know.
Yeah.
They don't know about assimilation. They don't know about the Indian Act. You know, Andrew Jackson, what he's, you know, trying to do to Natives, mm-hmm. Indian Removal Act, all these things, you know.
Pretty much every treaty was disregarded. I mean, you know, it was there would always be a treaty, an agreement, and then years later, the American government would break it. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah.
Over and over.
People always often say, well, you guys made that deal, you know, you guys made that deal and that's why we have the land, you know, because we made the deal fair and square. And like, are you kidding? You know, like, you know, the, like, we don't have the imperial mind, you know, like the conquest like that. And so of course, it's going to be shady in the communication. We don't speak English language, you know, and you got translators and you got all of this, these elements, you know, mm-hmm. you have all these things that go on and you just, you know, they don't know what's going on sometimes. But anyways, there's just so much to go into detail about that stuff. So as far as me being raised in the church and my growth as a human being, and then back to Melina, right?
Yeah, yeah, you pronounced it perfectly.
Back to mm-hmm. Melina's, when she said the fusion of the culture mm-hmm. came in. So when I started doing Christian hip hop, you know, and stuff like that, I never added the culture because of those things like, oh yeah, it's evil. And, you know, they say that it's evil. So, okay, I want to appease the Christians, you know, the Native Christians of not being evil and putting away those things. Even though I continue to dance, I don't know, wear a mask in church so much, so many people, you know, but anyways, mm-hmm. we, I never added the culture because always on the traditional side to appease them is like, yo, you don't, it's, that's delicate, you know, like all Apsaluga music comes from the entity of wind. So Apsaluga music is all spiritual. It is all said, like our songs come from the creator, from the element of wind, you know. Mm-hmm. And so just to add that to mm-hmm. anything, you know, is like, oh man, somebody's gonna say something, they're gonna get mad, you know. It's just like, it's too delicate. I'm just not gonna do it. So I never did all those years. I just was rapping about Christianity and everything, and then as I grew, I
started making theological lines carefully.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you have that too as well, you know. You have like theology, you have, you know, like there's just so much
trying to appease everyone on all these different realms,
please,
man.
Please, everybody. It's so exhausting, man. I just so free. You know, I'm so free now.
I can imagine. Like,
from that, you know, it's just it's crazy to be in that prison, I guess you could say. You know, sometimes it's a prison.
Definitely.
And so it was freeing for me along the way. Like, I went through some hard stuff, and that was, because when you're rapping for the Lord and you're doing good in life, and they're like, yeah, go, man. You know, this guy, man, they're good Christians. They're good. And all of a sudden you trip and you make a mistake, you know. Let's look for the next guy who's perfect, you know, not making, you know. And then you see the true colors. You see the true colors of the circle of Western church culture, the culture of Christians, and then you're like, oh man, I thought you guys loved me, you know. Now I'm ostracized, you know, I'm not holy enough no more, you know? I'm not worthy to rap or whatever. So going through all of that stuff, I believe myself that it was the Creator's will, you know, or he allowed me to lift that veil to see those things, you know, so my mind would be open, my heart would be opened. And I wouldn't be trapped in there, you know, no more. I'm so thankful that I had to go through that stuff. And so as I grew, you know, going through those things, I still never added the culture. You know, I still never put it in there because I knew somebody, the elders were going to say something, you know, nobody was doing that. You know, it's like sacred, you know, you just don't do that. Keep it separate. But how it came was in Bozeman, you know, it was in Bozeman. At the MSU Native American Heritage Day, they said, can you dance? We danced. And then we got done. We went off stage. And the lady said, don't you guys rap too? I heard you rap. Yeah, we do. Why don't you rap for these guys, you know? Okay, we'll go change and we'll come back. No, we want you to go on rap right now, you know? So we were kind of forced into the position rapping.
That's
in
amazing. Oh, yeah.
So even though it was simplistic, you know, just kind of like, oh, well, we just didn't change our clothes, you know, we're just in our outfits and we're going to do this other culture in our outfits. You know, these two cultures are coming together by accident, you know. Mm-hmm. And so we did. And people were like, yo, this is something else.
This is fire right now. These guys are charged up.
Yeah. This is something different. You know, wow.
That is amazing. But,
so it was special, you know, in that moment. And when we got done, this is the part that was the powerful part, the transition inside my heart. Mm-hmm. We went off stage, and then one of our elders was walking over. His name was Sarge Oldhorn. He's my grandpa. He just passed away last month. And so he comes over. And I thought he was going to scold us, you know, because he's like a historian. He's like a medicine man. You know, he knows the culture, he knows the history, he knows all kinds of stuff about being Upsalu guy, you know, very respected. And I thought, man, this guy's going to say, you guys shouldn't have done that. What's wrong with you? I thought he was going to say that. But he came over and I looked up, and then he took his hat off, you know, and he put his hand down. He goes, grandson, he said, I'm going to shake your hand. He said, that was pretty powerful. See, you guys got up there, showed them all that you're proud to be Upsalu guy, you know, and you're good dancers too. And then you spoke the language of those young people out there, which is rap, you know, hip hop. He said they listened to you because of it. And then you had something positive to say, you know. I heard you talking about being a father, being a husband, you know, being drug and alcohol free. I said, man, that's it. That's where it's at. He said, keep that up. Keep doing that, man. It's powerful, you know. Our young people are dying. They're committing suicide. They're on drugs and alcohol. We're losing our language. We're losing, you know, our culture. He said, anything you do, you know, to promote that and reach those people who are hurting, he said, man, it's worth it. It's worth doing. Keep it up, boys. You know, right there. Like, oh, hey, all right. This is a respected elder in our tribe, you know. For
you
him
got
to
the real
see
empowered.
That.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or,
it was like if he got up and he said that in front of all our tribe, you know, had all our tribe there, and he goes, this is what they're doing, you know, they would all say, it's good, you know, it's good, because he's that respected. And so with that in mind, my heart changed. I thought, you know, yo, it is a good thing, you know, It is a powerful thing to use this to promote culture, to promote positivity, you know, and spirituality and things like that. It is a good thing.
Absolutely.
As long as you, it's delicate still, you know, but as long as you keep that intention good, pure, and you know the culture, you know, and like, and you just kind of watch your steps.
It's very
and
authentic. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a delicate thing. And so
well, thank you to the grandfather for giving you the thumbs up and the stamp of approval to.
Oh yeah, for sure. I thought about that, man, when I was at his funeral. You know, I was just like, man, because of him, you know, because of his encouragement that day, as like my heart changed. You know, I probably would have never tried that. You know, I probably would have never been confident to like put the two together. And so that's how it kind of came about.
That's amazing.
That's quite the gift he gave you. It's awesome too that it started as kind of an improvisational thing, because that's such a core nature of hip hop. It's like it kind of in the American larger culture, like jazz was the headquarters of improvisation for like decades, and then it became hip hop. And so like it's as it morphs and grows, like the way that you just did it on the spot and you were like, hey, let's just blend these things together on the spot. That's such a, it's like a perfect fit for
it's true to form.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's it. I love that story. I'm so glad you told it to us. That's great.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to say big plus one to that story, because I think I missed that in the original interview of how this all just organically happened, when they're like, you also rap too. And you're like, let me go change. And then she's like, no, keep that on. So it just, everything fell into place. Like the universe had set you up to throw you into this and have that, you know, have that elder watching you at that moment at the same time. And I just think that's such a beautiful part of the story. So yeah, thank you.
It's very powerful. Like, I didn't know its power until later, you know, until later on, and all these things happen. And then I would ponder, you know, I would think about it. I was like, man, if that day didn't happen, I wouldn't maybe be, you know, in this position of a lot of opportunities and blessings, you know?
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah,
that's beautiful. Well, you have a lot of work to do, Superman. Your documentary was so inspiring. And it's really powerful, the work you do. And then I was doing some more research for our conversation and just reading and watched a couple of documentaries about Native reservations. And man, it's a bleak situation. I mean, we need you, and we need others like you that are making art and being creative in, you know, powerful, spiritually motivated ways, because the community is still reeling with that collective trauma. And I guess, you know, I would like to talk about that, about, you know, on the reservation, you know, what are some perhaps, you know, misconceptions about reservation life, and what are some solutions? How can we help? How can other Americans not on the reservation, lend our support?
For sure. Yeah. So reservation life, you know, it's like third world country living, you know, like it's crazy, you know, like where we have this colonization and it's not taught. I think in college you can take a Native American studies course, you know, and then that's where people's minds are blown. You know, they're like, yo, what the heck? It's like this, you know, we did this. Like, how come I didn't learn this in elementary school? Right. You know, I thought Christopher Columbus discovered this, and we had Thanksgiving, and everything's all good with these natives.
Pilgrims, and ate dinner together. And
it's very, very whitewashed propaganda education that we got. Yeah,
definitely. So there's that. It's the education part. And I think it's the shame of America, you know. Like what was done to the natives is the shame of America. And so they don't want people to know, you know, they don't want them to find out, because I mean, it's injustice, you know, it's like, man, we got to change that. You know, I think America is afraid that people are going to be moved with empathy and say, you know, we got to right this wrong. You know, we have to right this wrong in some way. And, so yeah, the reservation living, I've heard also that you know, Hitler and what he'd done to over there with the concentration camps, that he got that idea from what was done to natives, you know, taking their food source. And, you know, that was the way right there, man. They took the food source, the buffalo, you know, took off the... And that's crazy because the dance you see that I do, you know, there's a story that it comes from the Buffalo Bill Wild West show, you know, and actually he had a hand in that taking of the food source. You know, he got his name from killing a lot of buffalo during that time. Let's take the food source of them, put them on this reservation, you know, and they'll be dependent upon us, you know, and we can control them. And so that's kind of like where it went. And from that, that just has a, it's like a bomb being dropped, you know, and just the waves are, you know, just affecting everybody. And even me today, I'm affected by it, you know, people are affected by it. Like how we think, our mentality from living on a reservation and being just, you know, stripped and raped of our identities, you know, and our spirituality, the dehumanizing that was done to Native people, that we're still feeling, that we're still healing. You know, it's such a traumatic thing. And so we're still healing from that. And so when you see
Native, it's very real. And I really hope that it does generate empathy for your culture and other Native cultures, because you know, I think there are potentials in American progressivism and America. There are these kind of splintered American political movements right now that are trying to acknowledge, the rights of natives and the rights of indigenous people. I know like the Standing Rock activism was so inspiring, to many of us, kind of fellow Americans, but distant in proximity from the Dakota Access Pipeline, the right to build or not build on Native land, that was the Standing Rock, for anyone who's not familiar, look it up. It was extremely powerful because tens of thousands of Natives and Native sympathizers camped out, protest these oil companies. I know that armed guards were involved. I mean, there was all this kind of action around that taking place. And ultimately, they did start to build a pipeline. There was a spill or two. Currently, there was actually a big victory recently in the Army Corps of Engineers having to review the environmental impact since having a pause on it. There's an appeal process right now, but they did have some momentum stopped recently, I know. So anyway, about that, you know, that's just an example of kind of Native peoples and Native sympathizers rising up. And you know, I think I gave a little bit of money. I didn't do too much, but you know, a lot of kind of activists and progressive activists. I knew several people that went there and filmed and photographed, et cetera. And so, were you close to those protests? How did that spirit of, you know, kind of spirituality in action, how did that affect you?
Yeah, for sure. So Standing Rock, like before anybody knew Standing Rock, those are our Lakota relatives, you know. Absaluga and Lakota are old enemies. You know, we used to be on the plains, man, stealing each other's horses, you know, going back and forth, you know, revenge, man, stealing each other's wives, you know, just like, you know, it was, I guess it was this, the plains living, you know.
The old feud.
Yeah, the old old wars and stuff like that. Many stories, you know, many amazing stories, and always respectful, you know, like the old medicine men, like after all of the colonization happened, the Crows and the Lakotas used to come back together, you know, and visit and dance together. And then they would talk about, hey, who's that one warrior who wore this certain thing, man? That guy was brave. That one battle, man, he came in there. Who was that guy? You know, oh, that's so-and-so, you know? And they would exchange those stories, you know, in a peaceful, respectful way. What were we talking about? Oh, Standing Rock. Anyways, Standing Rock. So anyways, those are our old enemies, but we're relatives now. People kind of play along. I mean, we joke about each other, you know, still to this day. And there's people who act like, oh, we don't like those Crows, or we don't like those Lakotas, you know, whatever, but
that's funny.
That's foolish, you know, like
old feuds die hard, hey man.
You know? Yeah, they try to act like that. But if they really were that way, if they really knew their elders aren't like that. They always show respect. Yeah. And so
just shout out Black Elk, is a famous Lakota medicine man. Black Elk Speaks is like anyone that's interested in Native American spirituality. Check that one out. Black Elk Speaks is the story of his life as a kind of native prophet and shaman, healer, mm-hmm. had visions, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got that book, Black Elk Speaks. I started reading it and I was like, yo, I like this, man. I like this guy's vision. It really jumped out to me, you know, when he, a certain part where he's like, yo, I need to go participate in that ghost dance. You know, those are my people. I'm a leader. And so he went, and then his vision of seeing the many colors, I think it was a being on a tree. I think that was the thing, but many colors were coming out him, you know, and the hoop.
Very rich nature imagery. Yeah, exactly.
Sure. And the hoop was
mountaintop
restored. Yeah.
The hoops.
That was amazing. Yeah. Like when I heard that part, I was like, yo, this is powerful. And I finished that book and I was just motivated, you know, to do my part in, you know, bringing that together. And not even a week after I finished the book, I get a letter in the mail from somebody in Japan, and he's a non-native guy. And he goes, Hey brother, I've been watching your music. I saw your videos. I really like what you're doing. I saw you present to kids in the school. He said, man, you remind me of somebody. You remind me of this guy named Black Elk. If you get a chance, read this book called Black Elk Speaks, you know. Yeah. And I just finished it. I was like, oh, wow. I told my wife, yo, that's weird, aren't you? That's yeah, wild. That's weird. A week after that, I go to Colfair dancing at the powwow there. And we go to a powwow stand, ordering some food. And she's a non-native lady as well. And we start talking. I started telling her what I do. Yeah, I rap and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, you need to read this book.
No.
And before she even said, I just looked at my wife. She already knew. And I said, what book? And she goes, you know, Black Beats. You know, so this, like Melina says, you know, the stars come together and the universe aligns sometimes. And that's what was happening. So as you said, Bob, about Standing Rock, during that time, I had finished the book. Standing Rock was going on. I've been going to Standing Rock before everybody knew about Standing Rock because we did suicide prevention with the youth there for years, many, many years, you know. And so when that started happening, I said, yo, I'm going to go, you know, go check it out, man. This is history being made for Native people. I'm going to go, you know, check it out. And so I took my family over there. And when I was there, they say, hey, man, you need to perform. You know, we're going to have a performance, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, sure. And so I went to go perform, and there's a young lady named Maimuna Yosef. She was there. She's Choctaw, and she's Black. And so amazing artist, man. If you get a chance, if you saw the song called Miracle, this is where.
She's on one of your records. Yeah, yeah.
This is the birth. This is the birth of that. From reading the book, Black Elk Speaks, and all those things happening, I go to Standing Rock. She's there. We connect. She's a looper. She has a loop machine. I have a looper. She said, yo, we need to make a track together. I said, yo, let's do it. And then I go back to our regular homes and I send her the beat, you know. It's like, oh, we're going to make a Standing Rock song, you know, whatever. And so she makes the song. I do my verse and send it to her. I don't even tell her what to sing. I don't tell her the content, nothing. We're just doing a song for Standing Rock, you know. And she comes up with, you know, Spirit of the Ghost Dance, you know, on her own. Like, just amazing, you know, miracle. So,
like, literally the same motifs. That's amazing.
It just like comes together in that amazing, you know, Black Elk Speaks and the whole spirit of bringing that hoop together, bringing people together. Standing Rock's happening. People are coming together from all walks of life, all religions, everything. And like, it makes me want to cry. You know? Like, yo, man, it's like, because it's so powerful, you know. Like, I haven't even shared this story, you know, of how that song came together. But I knew it was powerful. I mean, it did its thing, you know. It had its place, and we put it out there. And so when I went to Standing Rock, it was like that. There's a lot of people, you know. Man, Peyote singers over here having a meeting. The powwow singing over here, man. These guys are singing some, you know, some hymns, you know, whatever. There's just all kinds of cultures and, you know, spiritualities going on. And just to see that unity happening was amazing. You know, that feeling of like, wow, this is, you could feel it. If you were at Standing Rock, you drive through, you could feel the power that was there, that all the world was praying. You know, you could feel the people's prayers in that place.
And I can imagine. I felt a little bit a billion miles away down here in Texas, so I can only imagine. There was even a video of a herd of buffalo show up. You know, at some point, and it's just like, oh my god, if you don't just have casual, chills,
was it naturally? Like, yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah,
they heard it. They heard it. I'm over. I remember when that video came out. Did. They're like, "Yo, they made it seem like the buffalo just came."
They heard it. They heard
it. Awesome. Yeah, still,
if they fooled me,
still, it's still like it did its part. You know, super it's still bad. Like the energy went through and the encouragement went through for the frontliners. You know, shout out to all the frontliners, man. I wasn't on the front lines. You know, I wasn't there. I didn't get. Mace.
Yeah, people got arrested harmed physically by security guards and troopers. It was a pretty bleak scene in some instances. And, you know, I think it was also a pretty kind of collective gasp of a military state and kind of what the American government's capable of in, you know, detaining nonviolent protesters. So it was inspiring in many ways and you know, unsettling in other ways. I put out a film about Palestine earlier this year in January. I worked on it for about 2 years, and one of the activists, Palestinian American activists in it, was there. He went to Standing Rock, and he mentioned Standing Rock and kind of native you know, indigenous protest kind of in solidarity with Palestinian protest, in solidarity with Black American protests, and kind of how there's this really interesting connectivity in that, you know, the struggle is connected globally against oppression. And only by connecting all of them can we make momentum and, you know, start to overturn the power structures of old. And, you know, the internet is helping with that. The internet's getting across you know, different kind of avenues and different scenes of people. Like, for example, Palestinian activists were tweeting at Ferguson activists at one point about how to avoid tear gas and how to clean that off your face with what type of rags and things like that. So, you know, there's an interesting kind of you know, resistance subcultures emerging right now, which is inspiring. But you know, the other guys got tanks too. You know, it's definitely the struggle continues. So may we continue to connect and make progress towards you know, the opposition.
Yeah, I was hoping that a lot of shockwaves came out of that out of Standing Rock that affected you know, places other than that, because there's just so many issues. Like, I know even recently some friends of ours were on like a compilation album based on an Austin, Texas label, and like all the proceeds were going to a Texas tribe that is dealing with very similar shit. Like they're just trying to use their own land, and they're getting like sued, and like the Texas legal system is just doing like terrible things, and like it's exactly what you would expect, you know, especially in Texas with like the type of government we still have in power there, you know, despite the recent election, it seems. But yeah, there's just so many like little pockets. And like you said, we don't hear about it. And like, I hope that the ones that don't get as much attention as Standing Rock did are also, I hope the tides are turning in their favor as well, even if, you know, and I hope to like learn, you know, figure out how to help those causes more, because there's just like you said, there's so many tribes and so many people out there that are feeling the effects of this massive empire that has done so many terrible things. And like you said, it's like a bomb that went off, and we're all these like reverb effects, you know, that we're all dealing with. And I don't know. They're just, I'm hoping that there is like a unification of that cause, because it's such a big problem that it needs such massive support from every corner of the earth to make a sure. difference.
Totally.
And that's why we're doing stuff like this, you know, we're coming together, man, just collectively, mm-hmm. you know, with that same spirit. So it's good.
Yeah.
Hear, hear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott and I were talking about, there was a Vice article about cannabis cultivation on reservations legally. You know, there's a lot of money in that. And yeah. I trust natives to growing crops. You guys are pretty good at it. Yeah, corn, not to generalize natives again, but we mm-hmm. learned agricultural techniques from you guys. And I like that. Closing the loop historically on empowering native cultures to grow cannabis and grow, you know, things that can make the reservations money mm-hmm. and provide mm-hmm. jobs and like give these young people careers and economic opportunity. So hopefully that ties into this development and this progress.
Yeah, for sure. I just heard that Montana, our state, they legalized it now here in South Dakota mm-hmm. as well. You know, so mm-hmm. it's going to be interesting to see, see how that pans out, you know, pros and cons, you know, with everything. So
pros and cons. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
everything.
That's true. mm-hmm. Very true. Talk to us a little bit about, I'm so enjoying our conversation, I could kind of get lost in any one of these tangents. I do want to hear more about your work with the youth and your work with the kids. We interviewed the founder of Mindful Kids a couple weeks ago. Her name's Heather Feinberg. She's amazing. Just wrote a children's book. She works with various ages, but teaching them kind of contemplative practices and meditation and things like that. Our team is interested in that space and kind of bringing this stuff to kids and to the youth, like kind of before they're craggy old adults, almost a little bit. Like there's an opportunity with young people that doesn't exist with the rest of humans. So you know, tell us more about how rewarding, I bet, that impact has been for you.
Yeah, definitely. So when you start to become an artist, you know, it's always for the fun and the love of the culture, you know, hip hop stuff. And so, as I said, I'm always thankful for the upbringing, you know, that my mom had with me of trying to live right. I remember trying to make a mixtape, you know, I was trying to make this mixtape because I was a DJ before MC. And so I was making this mixtape and I was kind of like hosting it myself, you know, I would say stuff, you know, hey, yo, man, this is Superman, DJ Superman, you know, and I was cussing up a storm, you know. I was like, yo, you mother effers, man, this is going down, you know, just like going off, you know, cussing, just totally out of character, you know, like, and I came out of the room and my mom looked at me and she's like, what are you doing? You know? She's like, that's not you. You know, that's not you. You know, I could see the disgust, you know, the disappointment, you know, on her face. And so at that moment, I was like, man, I don't want to disappoint my mom. You know, I don't want to see her like that again. You know, I just felt shameful at that moment because it really wasn't me. You know, I wasn't a big cusser. You know, I'm still not. I was just like, you know, it wasn't really my character. And so, that kind of like made me want to honor my mom more. You know, that situation kind of made me want to honor her. And if I'm doing something that's going to disappoint her, I better make sure, you know, or I didn't want to do it at all, you know. So how she raised me is how I was going to do my music. And so I started off with good content, you know, recordings. Like you can't find a Superman track where I'm cussing at all, you know, like there, it doesn't exist. And which is cool, I guess that's my gimmick, you know, I don't cuss. But
your gimmick is you're from the heart. That ain't a gimmick, baby.
Along those lines, you kind of like, you know, you do your best and you kind of want to be cool. And you, when you're an MC, you write and you spit lyrics for other MCs, you know, so they'll listen and be like, yo, this guy's dope, man. You know, you get those props from other hip hop people. But then along the way, when you're writing, you find out like, yo, this is like therapy, you know, for me, man, to express myself. And if, you know, I'm going to get vulnerable, you know, on some of these songs, you know, and yeah. write about my life, and I'm going to share myself with the listener. And I found out along the way, when you do that, when you're vulnerable and you share your story with the people, there's somebody out there who receives it, you know, and they're inspired. I found out that's what happens, you know, like as an artist, which was amazing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so right then I realized, yo, I have a responsibility, man. You know, I can't just be getting on this mic and saying a bunch of crazy stuff, you know, influence people in a wrong way. I can't do that. You know, it's not me. I don't want to. So if people are going to listen to me, I'm going to say something good. I'm going to try to inspire them. I'm going to try to motivate them the best I can, you know, get them on a good path, whatever, you know, however that looks. And so I did, I started doing that and realized along the way, like, yo, these, they want a speaker at the school, you know, they want a positive speaker who doesn't drink or do alcohol, you know, and talk about his story. We'll pay you money for it. And I'm like, yo, what? Okay, yeah, go over there, you know, and then you share. And then that's how it kind of started, you know, with reaching out to schools and young people, was just, you know, being who I am and just letting it flow and realizing there's a need for people to hear this story. You know, there's a need yeah. out there for, you know, people to hear your story and your story, you know, Melina's story, Bob's story, you know, just like there's a need for people out there. And also they might have heard the same story out there, but they will only receive it from you. Yeah. That's exactly. amazing right there. Like they exactly. could have heard the same story from different people, but for whatever reason, they'll only hear it from you, because whatever connection they have to you or whatever, you know,
you hit like, them in a way that they feel connected to you. And they feel, that was my favorite part about one of your interviews, actually. It was, you were talking and there's just people in the back that are always messaging you afterwards. Like, hey, I was that person in the back. And oh, it makes you so happy that those people told you that and reached out to you, because you didn't see them. You're just speaking your story. And then the impact and how far it goes. And to your point, you resonated with them. And I think that that's absolutely beautiful. It's very inspiring.
Absolutely.
Yeah, to like see the impact, you know, like tangible, you know, tangibly absolutely. Happen. And you get that message from a young person saying, I was going to commit suicide tonight, man, but I listened to you and I felt good, you know, I felt like living, and you inspired me, man, to want to better my life. Thank you. Thank you for saving my life. You know, like you hear that and it just blows your mind, you know, yeah. it makes you like go forward, you know, keep on going, man. It's like, yo, I'm going to be doing yeah. this. If I keep hearing
it's like, what else is that, there to man? Do?
Yeah.
Than that.
Yeah.
I'm going to get fulfilled, you know, like, hey, that's so fulfilling, you know, just like gives you that purpose.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It gives you chills.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Man,
thanks for sharing that.
You bet. So with the schools and stuff, I've been doing that, you know, like for a long time, you know, like I'll get invited to schools. I'm doing virtual, you know, school presentations. Next week I'll be going to a school and doing some stuff. And the good part about that as well, it's like, first it was just kind of like native schools, you know, oh yeah, this guy's Crow, he's native. He can talk to our native students, you know, they can relate, you know. And then all of a sudden these non-native schools mm-hmm. want me to come over, you know, and that yeah,
man.
Was amazing.
The whites need to see a real native mm-hmm. speaker from the heart too, man. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. And so I get to
educate everybody.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yo, I get to go in front of the whole school, the principal, the teachers, and say, this is native land. America was founded on the genocide of indigenous people. Yes. You know, bam, yeah. yo, I told you to tell the truth yeah. like that, you know, and yeah. that
the principals amazing. Walk into the audio booth.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, just amazing, because they might not ever hear just a little gem like that. You know, they might never yeah. heard it from anybody or even, you know, like thought about it. And so I get to yeah. share that. And I think that's where the arts come in, you know, the art of hip hop, of dance, you know, of the mm. culture. It allows me to share boldly, you know, truths like that, which can make somebody go, oh, I don't want to hear this, mm. you know, or whatever. They would respond in a different way.
Sure.
I didn't have the culture helping me, you know, just in a way it people are able to accept it, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Instead of
yeah, the role you're playing is mm-hmm. it's almost your Trojan horsing in a way, you know, this kind of information that you might or may not be able to get across by just showing up and talking about it.
Filling those gaps in the history curriculum that need to be filled.
For sure. Yeah, I'll get up there and say, this country was founded on genocide. Let me tell some jokes now. We'll laugh. Put your hands up in the air. Yo, do some hip hop.
That's funny. That's so good. Then
let's talk about, you know, reservation life. You know, just we go back and different gems. And you just kind of like learn, you know, you learn how to work a crowd, but communicate. You learn how to communicate to all people. So.
So cool. Yeah, you might be hearing more from us in the future, just to tease potential, you know, questions and even, you know, potential collaboration on native related content. I'd love to have your thoughts and guidance on relative material. Because, yeah, man, you're in it. You're doing really, really beautiful work. This has really been terrific.
I love it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, thank you for sharing everything. And the stories that you shared, I feel like I got a sneak peek behind the interviews, behind the scenes. You know, it was so beautiful hearing everything that you shared and just kind of full circle with the beginning, talking about the culture and the history and how much was missed in you know, academia growing up, and how you are quite literally the living educator in these schools now.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful just to kind of hear your entire journey and where you started and the road bumps that had to happen so that you could get to these different paths. It's honestly amazing. So I'm a huge fan of you, and I'm very blessed to have been able to talk with you tonight.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Same. And one thing about, is like, doing these presentations, you know, like in getting opportunities, like my wife was telling me, she's like, yo, you better up your knowledge, you know, like I'm not a historian, you know, I don't know everything there is about being native, being Upsalu guy, you know, like I don't know all the, you know, there's just so much to learn for myself too. And so that kind of helps me. It helps me learn about myself, because if I'm going to be in front of people, I better know what I'm talking about. You know, I better be genuine. And if I don't know something, I'll say, I don't really know. Or, hey, you can go talk to so-and-so. They might know him. You know? So it keeps me embracing my own culture, you know, and colonizing myself, you know, like I'm colonizing my mind, you know, like every day I'm trying to change my thinking, like all this conditioning that is being done, you know, to us since birth, you know, we're reconditioning ourselves, you know.
Deprogramming is a theme of the show for sure.
Yes, I'm constantly doing that, you know, with my own self and my culture as well. So sometimes I'll be like, man, I spent too much time with hip hop. I should be speaking the language, you know, and I should know all this stuff. You know, like there's that, but that's the journey. You know, I'm here today. I still have time to do those things and also express that's what it is. That is the assimilation, you know, that the government has put in place. It's working. Yeah. It's in effect right now. It's in action right now. And so we have to be mindful and in a state of urgency, you know, to combat that.
Totally. Yeah. That self-awareness that you have about where you're at is the first step to, you know, untangling it and learning more. In that same spirit, actually, Superman, that's a great segue into kind of our last question for you, which, you know, we talked about Black Elk Speaks, which is terrific. Any other kind of favorite books or teachers that have, you know, impacted you or affected you from obscure to popular that people might be able to learn more about, either Upsalika culture or native spirituality in general or beyond that?
There's a lot of books. I wish I had like my books here to show you, but I have a whole stack of them, you know, that I read. And there's Plenty Coos. His name is Plenty Coos. He's like one of the last chiefs of our people. That I you know, I read that really inspired me, because in fifth grade, our fifth grade teacher, who was Absaluga as well, a teacher, like one of my favorites, she read that book to us there, you know. And in my mind, I would listen to this chief, or, you know, the story of this chief, and he was Absaluga like me, you know. And so when he was 10 years old, you know, they came into the camp and said, oh, these mountains are sacred. You young kids, you young men, go to these mountains and pray, you know, get your visions and come back, get your power and help your people. And he was only, what, 10, 11 years old. And he went out and he fasted and prayed and he got his visions, you know, and came back. And for her to talk about that, you know, like, to hear, like, I was connected to that, you know. I'm Absaluga. We're from the same tribe, you know. That's like one of our leaders, and it inspired me at a young age. And so that's one book there. Pretty Shield is another book.
Plenty Coops, Chief of the Crows. Is that? It looks like that might be his autobiography.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that Amazing. One. That's one of my favorites there.
Cool.
Awesome.
Pretty Shield. She's a medicine woman of our tribe. That's another good one. There's one right here too. I got that here. My banana bread is on it. So, oh, Two Leggings. It's a good book as well. And there's who else? Deepak Chopra. I read his books as well.
Yeah, we like him.
Yeah, he's a cool dude, man. I like that guy.
Cool.
Who those else? Are great.
There's another one. God.
Yeah, those are terrific.
This one's called God is Red. If you get a chance, read that one. It's a real good one.
Okay.
Spirituality, Native Spirituality.
Oh, wow.
You got that one, you said?
Oh, no, sorry, I don't. Yeah. I said okay. It's because that sounds like something I would want
God
to read.
God is Red, so. A Native View of Religion.
Okay.
Yeah, that's something very much up my alley.
Yeah.
Cool, yeah, and we'll link these in the description of this interview.
And there's just one of my favorites called Wrestling with Jesus. And let me share a quick story about that real quick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
please.
It's spirituality, you know, and stuff. And so, you know, coming from Christianity and my growth and as a human being, as a man, you know, and questioning things, you know, about, you know, religion and all of that. During that time, I was on tour and I was in Portland and I was getting ready to go to the next spot. And I wanted a book, you know. I had a friend say, you always need to be reading a book, you know, always be reading something, you know. So I went in there to get a book and I went to the motivational, like Tony Robbins, you know, that's another author I love, Tony Robbins. I started looking for some, there's Joel Osteen, all these inspirational books that were there. I was checking them out and there was a book there. It had a white cover and on the cover was, you know, arm wrestle, you know, like two people arm wrestling. One had a robe, you know, like, said Wrestling with Jesus. And so I was like, yeah, that looks interesting, you know. So I pick up the book and I just open it up randomly. I start reading at it and it's a satire, you know. It's a satire of like this guy having a conversation with Jesus, and Jesus is saying, oh yeah, you know what, man, they put that name holy on the Bible because of this, you know, politics, blah blah blah, you know. He would address things like that, you know. And oh yeah, hell, you know, like this. And he would put in, he had all these perspectives, you know, like, which were amazing. I really liked the one about hell. You know, he's like, okay, we have an eternal God who loves us, and our time on earth is so, we can't even fathom the two, you know, eternity and our time here on earth is just like, we can't fathom eternity. Why would a loving God even care about our behavior in a split second, you know, to send us to eternal hell, you know? It's like, this is unfathomable. It's just, you know, and there's things like that.
I've struggled with that one too.
It was good. So I'm looking at the book. I'm thinking, it's cool. It's interesting. I put it back. Started looking around, but I'm drawn, you know, I'm drawn to that info that I read, that data that came out of that book, you know. And then I'm just like, should I get this book or not? And I'm just like, then I talked to the creator in my heart. I said, God, you want me to have this book? I said, give me a sign, comical, you know, just comical, you know, give me a sign, you know. I'm gonna look around this bookstore real quick. You give me a sign. I started looking over here and looking over here, and I look over here And like right on this side of me, there's a whole shelf of Bogglehead Einsteins, you know, they're in boxes. And the boggle is the arm moves like this, you know, pointing at the head. And the one I focused in on was moving. The arm was moving in the box like that. Looking at me and I'm looking at him, Einstein, you know, and he's looking at me. And I'm like, yo, there's no wind. You know, there's no wind in here. I didn't bump the shelf, you know. Like, this is weird. Okay. I thought, all right. That's comical, awesome. You know, comic. The word I'm trying to, you know, it's like not serious, you know, just like,
yeah,
okay, I'm gonna buy the book. I grab the book, I go to the desk, I put it on the desk. The lady comes in, she grabs the book, you know, looking at it, and then she's like looking at her computer, and she's like, where'd you get this book? And I said, over there, the inspirational section. And she goes, okay. And she calls her manager over. Her manager comes over and she's looking at the book. They're looking on the back, looking at the computer. You know, and they're like, she's like, whose book is this? And I'm like, I don't know. I'm trying to buy it. And then like, it doesn't exist. You know, it's not in our system. And I'm like, oh. And then I was like, well, whose book is it? And the lady looks at me and she goes, I guess it's yours. And she gives it to me. She gives me the book. And my mind is like, okay.
It's, you know, too, like, funny. It's like
two unique, you know, situations, so supernatural, I guess you could say, just within 5 minutes, you know. And so I figured that the creator, you know, the universe wanted me to read that book. And that book was all about things like that. It was a 9-year study of like the politics of Western church culture and Christianity and the changing of the content of the Bible and, you know, all these things, these
theological questions that you had.
Yeah. You know. Questions that we all have, you know, about, you know, I think on the book, it says questions you always wanted to ask your pastor, but were afraid to, you know, something.
Wow.
Like,
that's good.
Just
the type of stuff Bob and I grew up talking about and discussing in high school and college. And so that all that, having grown up Christian and then discovering there was more to it than we were told as kids and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect, man. Just amazing. I love hearing stories, connecting with people who just, you know, broaden their minds and their hearts, you know, and it's just been an amazing time.
I love your synchronicity stories. You know, I think that's kind of a term Carl Jung talks about as far as like kind of spiritual moments that have significance in a way that's, you know, kind of almost unexplainable and can really jolt you kind of out of your day to day. And, you know, it seems like you, as you're following your heart, you know, you seem to get these and you get more of them. And so hopefully,
we'll be here all night.
Everybody can get a taste of experiences, you know? Yeah, exactly.
I love that.
So beautiful. Well, hey, Christian Parrish Takes the Gun is Superman. He's on YouTube. He's on Spotify. He's on everything. Come back and join us. We so enjoyed talking to you. We'll definitely be broadcasting this. We'll share the link, and so thankful for the work you do and for sharing your story.
Thank you. Thank you really for having nice me on. You. I appreciate it, man. You too as well.
Thank you so much.
Amazing.
Thank you.